All right, welcome into another episode of Preacher in the Hat. I don't want to delay too long before we get the old camera switch, and I'm sorry if you're not watching if you're only on audio, but we need to take a look at Dad right now, who is, Derek, I can't remember exactly how you put it, Preacher.
Preacher in the Hat in a Preacher in the Hat hat.
Yeah.
Oh, so there you go. Preacher in the Hat and a Preacher in the Hat hat. How about, I like that. That's good. Check it out.
Anyway,
shout out to Pastor Ron Burt.
Yeah, hooked you up with that for free, right?
Free. How about a gift, huh? Preacher in the Hat got a gift, man. How about that? Yeah.
Donations are flooding in, obviously.
Apparently.
In the form of headwear.
Yeah.
Hey, what better gift to a preacher in the hat than a hat? Hey.
Looks great. If you can't see it, it's a hat with our logo on it.
I know. I love it. Embroidered. Yeah. Really nice.
So as we dive into something interesting today, want to ask our question on the front end is, and I think we'll have a lot of good answers for this. So you can go around the horn on all of the different cool things that you did. But let's talk. I want to hear a little bit about the fun things or whatever it was that you used to love, like as an outdoor activity when you were growing up. Like, mm-hmm. What was some of the things that were just like top of your list?
Oh, it's easy. Easy. Colquitt, Georgia, block house. Of yard.
Block house.
A block house. That's important to the story. A block house, which meant you could throw a tennis ball against the house.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So in my backyard, on the side yard, I played World Series after World Series after World Series game. I was the pitcher most of the time. It was the bottom of the ninth. It was all that kind of stuff.
Are you kidding me?
I mean, that's a common thing. I'm not trying to say it was unique to me, but oh, yeah. And, man, I just loved it. I'd do it for hours on end. By myself.
Yeah.
By myself.
Cool. Sweet.
Fun.
I remember being pretty young, I guess probably six or seven maybe, but not old enough to know. We would go out and find different kinds of bugs and put them in a jar or something like that. Yeah. This is before you realize that you're actually not doing
them a service.
It's like, oh, I'm going to rescue this bug and put him in a jar. Like,
oh,
bug doesn't want to be in the jar. There's not much in there for it. But I do remember like favorite ones to find was, and we called them roly polies. I don't know what everybody else calls them. There's a scientific name.
That's what your mom called them. Roly-polies.
Yeah. And then they roll up into the, like they're crawling across, you know, your hand or whatever, but it, like if you touch them a lot of times they'll roll up into a little ball and it's just their protection mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely remember the roly polies. We had some, I don't know if you remember in our side yard, Eric, over by the creek.
Yeah.
There was that like rock formation sort of.
Yes.
But there was some soil on top of it. And we kind of like stand up on top of that. There was a ton of them over there. Find those.
You know, the one that I remember is the big green caterpillars.
Yeah.
That loved mom's pepper plants.
Mm.
Yeah.
And we got a couple of those and fattened them up big time.
Those we were old enough, we actually like took care of the bugs and fed them the things that they wanted.
That they needed.
as opposed to live.
So
did you get anything for the roly-polies, or was there
anything? I don't ever remember catching that.
I don't remember keeping.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are ones you just kind of find, hold them in your hand for a little bit and put them back.
Okay, gotcha.
We obviously played
tons of sports
outside.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever was in season.
Yeah.
Center point.
Mostly football, baseball. And we did have a basketball.
I would say heavily baseball, probably.
Yeah.
The other thing that I did enjoy was basketball. I had a basketball goal in my side yard, too, and I shot hoops a lot by myself, sometimes an hour or two at a time. I didn't have anybody my age. in my house. I mean, my brother Darryl was 5.5 years younger than me, but most of the time I shot hoops by myself. Mm-hmm. And
with the dumbest thing probably that we ever did that we didn't really have any clue what we were doing was we lived at the bottom of a cul-de-sac, but our backyard after our backyard was like this
big drop off.
I mean, not drop off, but like relatively steep hill down. Mm-hmm. And there was a road way back that like
West
way
Ridge.
Back there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was a nice hefty boulder, up near the top of,
the backyard,
that hill. Yeah. And me and you and another friend, I think, we're able to get enough leverage, you know, like everybody like sitting on the ground and then like both legs on the rock, got it going. And, it took out a tree, right? Like on its way down. Yeah. Like, so dumb.
Was thankfully, that Zach? It had to be Zach.
I can't remember.
It didn't make it to the road.
No, there was plenty of like, I don't know what you would call it. It wasn't just a ditch, but like there was plenty of space before it got to, once it leveled out, before it got to the road. Yeah. So it didn't even really make it out of the woods, but
It did. It crushed, it cracked a tree in half. I remember. Oh, it was one of those real small.
Ones, but we thought it was awesome at the time. And now looking back, you're like, wow, can't believe we did something like that. The reason I asked that question is because I got to thinking about just like being outside and, you know, and kind of that feeling. Derek, you and I experienced it some. We weren't necessarily like brought home by the streetlights, so to say. You know, it's like that was kind of the, you know, the thing from, you know, decades ago. But just like kind of being outside until you ran out of light.
Yeah, you did. Mm-hmm. I remember that. You know, and I remember that often.
And you just come in because there's no, you can't play anymore because
I remember that often.
You're out of light.
Yeah.
I got that just kind of struck me, the idea of like street light, you know, they used to say like when the street lights come on, that's when you got to go home. You know, that's been probably even before our time, you know, people would say that. I don't know if maybe they just kind of said that in movies and TV shows. I don't know. You know, no. But it was, you know, always this kind of a thing. And I was listening to this song by an artist called, his name is Benjamin William Hastings. And he wrote a song called Homeward. And it's just a fantastic song. We would play it. We would love to play it for you, but we would get like copyright strike automatically, for a song that's so new. So we can't play it for you, but I encourage you to listen to it. Homeward by Benjamin William Hastings. Just a fantastic song. And actually, there's another kind of side to the song that we'll probably get to maybe in another episode. But the main line of the song, one of the main lines of the chorus is like, if ever I stray, if ever I fall, won't you call me homeward? And it made me think, I don't know why, but it made me think of that thought, like that street light popping on, you know, and saying it's time to come home. And so I'm wondering what you like, you know, what might be in your head or your head about one of those times that God kind of popped that street light on and said, you know, it's time to come back, whatever that may mean.
Mm-hmm. You going first?
I'm going first.
Go first.
There was a time for sure in ministry where I kind of felt like I hit a wall, I guess, is a good one. I think maybe sometimes the phrase burnout gets used too much, or at least maybe a little too liberally, where things that maybe necessarily don't always cause burnout, we blame it on burnout. But I'd kind of gotten to the point where a lot of things had happened, and I was just mentally not with it, I guess. Mm-hmm. I was doing what I had to do, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I really felt through the time, through the however many months that I was, what do you want to say, like pushing through or something like that, mm-hmm. where the a lot of the we think of it as almost like heroic, but yeah. in reality, I think it's there isn't. Sometimes pushing through is selfish. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's what it was in this case, yeah. but mm-hmm. I really felt strongly that God was, that I needed to take a break, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it was a moment like that for me that I had early on, even long before the quote unquote, the street light came on, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Where I stood out in the street, even after the light came on.
Even when it was dark.
Even when it was dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I knew that, like, the street light stayed on, if you will, if we're going right, to go right. with that metaphor. Yeah. It stayed on, and he waited, right? Mm-hmm. God waited me out. Mm-hmm. And I think so many times we feel like this, or I know this specifically for me, like you feel like there's this assignment in your life or something mm-hmm. that you're supposed to be doing, but God also doesn't, I think if we reach a point where we're doing it for ourselves and we're doing it to push through because that's what we've always done, that's not the way, I don't feel like that's God honoring. Where I say like, oh, I'm supposed to do this, so I just got to do it. I got to push through, and I got to do it. When God is saying, I need you to, you know, take a step back so I can show you some stuff. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was a big change because I had never really gotten to that point in, particularly in ministry, but even really almost in anything, honestly, mm-hmm. where I needed to stop and let him show me some stuff mm-hmm. and for him to be like, hey, come inside. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about a few things, mm-hmm. you know? And, not that I was not in contact with, I'm not saying it, like, right. but you know, we're going with that, with the streetlight metaphor, I would say I was out there mm-hmm. and he needed me to come inside and I was pushing through for myself, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
But it's eye-opening, like, when he shows you, and you know, I know it's not, like, super specific, because I still feel like there's things that I'm learning, but I didn't hit that metaphor until you were talking about this in our planning session, is that like that's what he was doing. The lights came on and he needed me to come inside and, mm-hmm. and you know, we needed to rest. We needed to reboot. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've had several experiences like that, not just in ministry, but even personally too. You know, in ministry, you can be exhausted, but sometimes you can be exhausted in just everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's a possibility that I see people do it in business, not just ministry. I see people done it in other professions as well. But I've seen people do it for parenting, for example. They get exhausted with parenting. Sometimes they don't know how to turn. Don't know what to do next, losing sleep, all those kind of things. And so sometimes that can also be the case. And he calls me home. And I was just thinking, I had not thought about that until right now, about an incident for me. It was in ministry when I was really exhausted. We've kind of talked about it. It was connected to the church at Tuscaloosa. We've talked about in previous episodes. But after that experience, I was at a conference one time. And there was a gentleman that came up to me. I knew him. He was pastoring a church in Montgomery at the time. And he came up to me and in a conference. We were both together in a conference in Pennsylvania. Actually, I'm sorry. He had already moved to Pennsylvania. And he looked at me and he said, Steve, he said, while we were praying, he said, I felt like that God had a word for you. And I was like, okay. Because sometimes I'm skeptical of that through the years, you know. And I said, go ahead. He said, I think God wants me to tell you that he's not looking for preachers. He's looking for sons. And it was in that moment, Derek and Eric, that I knew that he was calling me back home. Because home for me is understanding that I am not who I, what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I am not pressing through in my task or my responsibility. Home for me is that awareness that my primary identity is son. And he called me back to that. And immediately when he said that to me, and this has been many, many years ago, back in the 1980s, when he said that to me, it really, really communicated well to me that God had spoken to me clearly, and he was calling me home by helping me realize I was not my identity. Mm-hmm. My identity was not in what I was doing. My identity was different.
And that's so relevant, because I feel like in so many places in ministry today, we've become role based.
That's right.
You know, and focused on that roles and what our title is, and you know, and how people mm-hmm. see us, how That's people right. Envision what we do. Yeah. It's like we need to make sure we have the appropriate this or that on what we do. And I love that he's telling you so early, honestly, so early, you know, in your ministry time that like, hey, for the rest of what we're, you know, because you're talking about it here, you know, in 2024, that's never going to matter. You know, that's never what you are.
And as I think we talked about in a previous episode, I'm a son who sometimes preaches, you know, and that's what calling me back to being a son is when God calls me home. Because when the street light's on, you're coming home. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you have to define what in this context, you have to define what home is. When God calls me homeward, what is that? What is that really? What's home for me? And it's not just home for me. I think it's home for every child. I think home is come back and be my child. Come back to just coming in and sitting down and eating. Come down, you know, and going to bed and resting and all that. Because that's usually what happened when the streetlights came on. You came home, mama fed you. And when I was growing up, you know, she fed you, then you got your little bath or something like that. And we didn't do showers back then when I was growing up. We did baths and got me a bed and then got in bed. We didn't have television. So, you know, usually we didn't stay up long. We'd have devotions at night as a family. And then so it was calling me home back to understanding that it didn't really matter what I was doing out there. I could have been the best baseball player or the worst baseball player. I could have been the best employee or the worst employee. I could have been all that. But when I come home, I'm just a son. Mm-hmm. I'm a son whose mama and daddy feed them, take care of them. And so I think Jesus calls us back to say, come on, let me take care of you. Yeah. And wherever that place is, in metaphorically speaking, is where I have to be. An interesting footnote to that was 12 years later, I was at a conference with this same man, again, with this same pastor, and he had moved away by that time, so we didn't see each other often. And I went up to him and I said, Vincent, I want to tell you that 12 years ago, we were together in a meeting, and you had a word from God for me, and you said to me, God's not asking for preachers, not looking for preachers, he's looking for sons. And he looked at me, and I said, I just want to thank you for what you did that day, because it's impacted my life tremendously. He looked at me, and he got tears in his eyes. And he's not a crybaby like me, but he had tears in his eyes. And he said, wow. He said, today, I needed to hear that. Mm-hmm. He said, I've just been going through some stuff right now in ministry, very painful experiences. He said, and I'm exhausted. I think for me, when the term burnout doesn't mean as much to me, the term exhausted does. Yeah, yeah. You can be exhausted physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and all that. And he said, I needed to hear that today. So interestingly, the word, God then called him back. Right. To home by when I thanked him for something he did 12 years earlier. It's really cool how God calls us home.
Mm-hmm. One thing that blew my mind recently that shouldn't have blown my mind. I couldn't even really tell you what day it was or when it was, but my wife, Catherine, was... I think we were just talking at the dinner table, and Isaac is four, so, you know, full of questions and all this sort of stuff. And we get, you know, I'm just kind of listening, really. They're talking, and, you know, Catherine is essentially ministering to our son, right? Mm-hmm. And he was asking questions and things like that. And she's literally giving him, like, this, you know, kind of the simplicity of the gospel and, mm-hmm. and Jesus and what he did. He had, it's March right now. So we were talking, you know, mm-hmm. Easter was on the,
right.
on the forefront mm-hmm. and all stuff. And,
yeah.
and I was like, I remember thinking in the moment, like, why is this blowing me away?
Mm-hmm.
Like, my wife is ministering to our son. Like, mm-hmm. why is this groundbreaking? Because I've done it. I've told him about mm-hmm. Jesus. Mm-hmm. I've mm-hmm. and but what you said brought that up for me when you were talking about it, and what, or even you, Eric, too, when you were talking about it not being, you know, so role based in what we're doing, mm-hmm. is that's it. Like, mm-hmm. what was happening right there is
mm-hmm.
as simple as we can make it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of the reason that, or for me, that was a calling me home moment
mm-hmm.
where I stopped to look at that and think, like, how much have I overcomplicated this sometimes to think that I have to be doing, you know, there's a certain function that I have to be doing or I'm not fulfilling what God has for me to do that mm-hmm. day. Or, you know, just even just this all this stuff that you overthink is that
mm-hmm.
every day he's calling us home, trying to renew those things in our mind.
That's right.
And the simplicity of a four-year-old child hearing the gospel, and then a couple nights later, he reiterates it back to me during cool. bedtime.
That's cool.
You know, just to know that he soaked mm-hmm. that in, and he's talking about when, you know, telling me, Dad, you know, this is when you can see Jesus, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Yeah.
And you
is that when he did the
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, he said, God, you know, he's like, there. Dad, you know, you can see Jesus when you get to heaven, or you can look in your
what
heart.
Did he call it? He didn't call it heaven, was
he called?
Yeah,
that's great. Yeah, it's great. Yeah, he calls heaven Kevin's Kevin. Right now, like,
which is great.
Which it took me a couple times before.
I'll shout out to
figure
all
out
Kevin,
who was Kevin when he was yeah. first talking about this, and he's like, Dad, you know, like, you know, if you want to see Jesus, you got to go to Kevin's, or he's like, or you look in your heart because Jesus died to get in your heart. And I'm yeah. like, that's it. How like that's that? the simplicity yeah. of
you think of
a mom ministering yeah. to her son and him reiterating it back two nights later to his dad. Like,
yeah,
we overcomplicate stuff so much.
Yeah.
It was a calling me home moment.
You think
because
of all,
I was like,
of all
I was the, like, I've overthought so much stuff.
Yeah.
And he's literally just trying to be like, look, this is what it is. This is what this is what I need you to do right yeah. here.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's yeah. beautiful.
You think of all the messages and sermons and like what we think sometimes mm-hmm. are cool and unique ways
yeah.
to discuss
yeah.
the gospel, to right. discuss,
yeah.
to discuss coming back home, you know, yeah. like we've right. been saying, and we try to put this spin on it or that alliteration on it or whatever. And mm-hmm. I'll, some of those things, you know, it's cool. It's nice. It's
fun
it's
to
great.
Do.
Yeah, it's, yeah. But like the fundamental
that's right.
part, like what you're saying is, it's what, like, to me, when I hear you telling your story, Derek, it's like the reason that it captured you is because it was like in that you hearing that moment is like the reminder that it is this simple.
Yeah, exactly.
And like it is this simple. It doesn't have to be all of this that we're pulling from all kinds of different places to try to make it more entertaining,
attractive.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's that. It's what it's as simple as what a 4-year old can understand.
So that's why Jesus said, "If you want to be the greatest in the kingdom, mm-hmm. be like this child, because the children call us home. And when I get called God's child, it calls me home. Now, I would add that sometimes I've stayed out overnight.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't just stand there under the streetlight for a while. As far as the metaphor we're using, as far as God is concerned, I've stayed out. I was homeless for a while, you know. I think a lot of times we get homeless for a minute, you know, or maybe a long time. And sometimes we're out here living in homeless and it's uncomfortable. We don't like it, but somehow or another, we think that's what we're supposed to be doing. I don't know why we think we are, but God uses the children to call us back home, because it's really about home. And home is, for us, who we are as children of God.
Yeah. You know what's kind of unique about this metaphor, too, is that he... In what came to my mind when we were doing, I was doing some preparation for this, is that he cut the street light on for me while it was sunny outside. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, like, that's the moment you're like, what did I do? Yeah. And it actually had to do with money.
Oh.
And this was a few years ago, and I had got a new job, good raise. We were the money that we were making was good. We saved plenty, you know, a good amount of money. And I felt like the Lord was telling me, you're bad at this. Like, you need to take better care of your money. You asked for, you ask for more, you ask for raises, you want to, in the way that I put it, I want to better provide for my family, all that kind of stuff. And he was like, you have more than enough to do all of that. And you need to take better care of what you're given. And, so we set out, I'm the kind of guy that I'll just do whatever and not look like, if I don't look. So, like, I'm not going to look at the bank account, because, you know what? I know there's enough there, so I'm not really just good. I don't want to see what this is gonna
y'all didn't
do.
Live with Eric in college, okay? And we didn't have a ton of money in college, but when he went to the store, he was coming back with something. And it wasn't always just, like, perishable. It wasn't like a bag of chips. It's like... I'm trying to think of a couple of examples, but there was this one time, like, we sat on these couches and watched TV. That was like our, you know, like, because
I was hoping you were gonna pick something else, but
yeah,
I knew
no. and you're like, I remember one time I'm like, oh man, this is just kind of getting uncomfortable, because, like, the couches weren't the greatest, and the way the TV was, like, before we go to bed, we were like, sit down and watch a TV show or something like that. And there was Eric had a couch on the wall, I had another couch on the wall, and you kind of, like, lean your head back against the armrest and you're like looking down at the TV this way. And I remember being something like, I'm kind of tired of laying on this thing. It's like, this headrest, not comfortable. I was probably the next day, Eric was like, yeah, I'm at Walmart or something like that. And he comes home with, like, this headrested pillow thing with, like, an arm. And he's got, like,
the pillows that look like they have, like, little short fat arms.
Yeah, I got you. I know what you're talking about.
And you just sit there like this, and you're like, oh, this is awesome. But, like, he's coming home.
Yeah,
that's who he is. And so I say something like that. Eric sees it in the store, like, oh, well, we gotta have
just
that.
Go ahead and get it.
We gotta have it.
And I mean, that's just how I like. That's a great story that you interjected, because of what I was just saying, is that, like, I'm the kind of guy that I don't check.
No,
like, I'm not gonna check, because, like, I know there's enough there. I don't know how much this is gonna deplete what I have.
I don't know if you remember this. So the night before you got married, at your rehearsal dinner, during my best man toast or whatever,
I told that, not that story, but I told Michaela, I was like, just be prepared. I was like, it, when he comes home from the store with stuff, it means he loves you. Yeah. It's like, you don't, you may not agree with how much he spent, but he's not doing it.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Anyways, but now he's over here changing.
Yeah, no, but I still do all of that.
But it was that, and I didn't feel, ultimately, so I you know, I said that I felt like the Lord was telling me basically you're not good at this, you know, this money management stuff. What I ultimately found him pointing me to was that idea that what I was talking about, where I was like, I'm just going to look over here. I'm going to look this way. I'm going to keep doing everything. I'm not going to keep track. Okay. I don't want to keep track. I don't want to know.
Okay.
And that's really what he brought me back to. He was like, no. He's like, I want you to do this and that, do something for your wife, do something for your brother. It's like, but you need to, with what you have been given, you need to, you and your family need to take charge of what you have.
Okay.
And so, and it was about understanding what we're doing with, you know, with our money and where it's going. Mm. And so I, you know, and it's a lot of people talk about this when you get into personal finance for the first time, and like turning your eyes to what you actually do is like, can be incredibly painful. Yeah. Because you could look at your fast food category of your budget and see that you like put out like $600 a month, and you have no idea, you had no clue that it was that bad.
My only fear about you continuing with this, if I may interrupt, is that you may be triggering our producer right now.
Yeah.
Our producer says that one of his problems is there's too many Amazon packages in the house. So keep going, Eric,
because
you might be able to help
him. I know
him.
He's just always on Amazon.
He's always he's an Amazon guy.
He's an Amazon guy, apparently, because he said there's way too many packages. So maybe you need, what you're saying might be helpful for Chris right now is what I'm thinking.
I guess so. But you know, that part for me was just about, look at what you're doing.
Yeah.
Understand mm-hmm. the consequences, of the decisions that you make. And we talked in previous episodes about discipline.
Yeah.
And it spread that, you know, that when I'm more financially disciplined, when I'm taking a closer look at, you know, our finances, and and I don't mean just restricting everything. I mean, knowing what is going on, like taking a better look at knowing what is going on, I'm more disciplined in other areas of my life as well.
One thing that I thought about, Eric, when you were talking about that, is the one discipline that calls me home is the discipline of rest. Mm. And rest can mean, in the situation you're talking about, rest can be is I have enough, I don't need to get more.
Yeah.
Rest can be I've been working and working and working, push my way through. The discipline of rest is actually one that's throughout the scripture. When you think about the principle Sabbath and you think all those things, this is probably another episode. But what it does do is help us understand that sometimes the only way we'll get called home is when we understand the discipline of rest. And so what I hear you saying, financially, God was actually saying, discipline yourself to rest financially. Don't feel like you have to spend the money all the time. Don't feel like you have to do that. Don't feel like you have to push through as a worship leader all the time. Don't think you have to do that. The discipline of rest is something that we don't understand a lot of times. And there's some people that have been very healthy, emotionally healthy church, Peter Scazzaro and some other people like that have done some really good work about Sabbath and how to take risk. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things that's been most important for me in life. And one day I'll talk to you about how I learned to take mini vacations to do that.
M-I-N-I,
yes, mini vacations. And some other things like that have helped me in this process. And I found that those mini vacations that I call them, and these are hour and 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 hours in the middle of a day, is to take a mini vacation. They sometimes call, in that moment, God calls me homeward in some interesting ways. Mm-hmm. But that's another, we could flesh that out more later.
The discipline of rest is probably, we could probably talk about that for
a long time.
And I've never heard it put that way. So we're going to have to dive into that in some planning meetings for sure. 100%. But I think the ultimate, and so, you know, folks who are listening have probably already thought about this and maybe thought we were going to go touch on this earlier in the episode. But the kind of like the ultimate story that everybody's going to pull back from this is the story of, you know, of the prodigals, the parable of the prodigal son. Mm-hmm. And I just think the key for that story for me and that I would want everybody to take away from this is that when we talk about that light coming on, that street light coming on and God calling us home, and what he ultimately said in the story, in that parable of the prodigal son, is that it's never too late. It doesn't matter, like you, kind of you alluded to in the past, it doesn't matter how many consecutive nights you decided to stay out. It doesn't matter what you did in the past, and if you think you're beyond, you know, redemption in some kind of area, it is literally never too late to see that light come on and make the decision to go back home.
Okay, so I'm going to do something we didn't plan. Come home, it's supper time. The shadows lengthen fast. Come home, it's supper time. We're going home at last. It was my mom's favorite song for me to sing when I would sing many years ago with my dad. And even without my dad, it was her favorite song. It was a song that my dad loved to hear Southern gospel groups sing. And at 1 o'clock on a Friday afternoon in November of this past year, as I found that song, or asked my sister and her husband to find that song to play it to my dad, who was on hospice and very, very, very near death. And so they played the song for him, and by his favorite bass singer, who had sung it at the end of his life, come home, it's supper time. And when you think about come home, it's supper time, some people think only in terms of the eternal, come home, come home. And that song reflects that. But if we can steal it and pull it back into this metaphor, come home, it's supper time. Because the deal is that God's calling us home. And when we get there, he's going to feed us. Mm-hmm. He's going to feed us. He's going to give us what we need. He's going to give us rest if we need it. He's going to give us all those things. He's going to feed us the things we need. Come home, it's supper time.
And I think in Luke 15, it wrapped it up, the story of the prodigal son, so perfectly, just on what you were saying. He said, "But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost, but is now found." Mm-hmm. That's me, that's you, and that's
right.
You.
That's right. It is.
For Derek, Steve, Chris behind the cameras, my name's Eric. This has been The Preacher in the Hat, and you know we'll see you next time.